showing up is probably 90% of the business, you know, of radio.
But and we have next hour, by the way, I just want to say, we have another interview coming up that you probably won't hear anywhere else but on Catholic Radio. And that's an interview with Matthew Bear, who was the producer of the 2014 film Unbroken, and he's the producer of the 2018 film Unbroken, Path to Redemption, which finishes the great story of Olympic runner, World War II prisoner of war, Louis Zamperini. Louis went on to start the Victory Boys Camp, which at that time dealt with what we used to call juvenile delinquents. Mm. Now we say at-risk youth.
Oh, is that what we say now? Okay.
I think so. I think that's the way
that's
it goes.
Yeah. All right, at-risk. We only got 10 seconds left. We got $145 to go. Give us a call, 877-288-1077, or go online at AveMariaRadio.net.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The Church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story. Story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program. It's
clear to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations. It's told by the same producer of Unbroken. Now we have Unbroken, Path to Redemption. You might call it Unbroken 2. And Matt Bear is going to join me today to talk about the life of Louis Zamperini and why today it is more encouraging and relevant than ever. So that's coming up in this hour. Also with me, Dr. Gerard Vershuin. Look at some of the moral questions of our time, dealing with natural law, dealing with physician-assisted suicide, the eugenics movement. Catholics have so much to offer the world based on both reason and revelation. And somebody like Dr. Vershuin is a great guide in helping us think through these issues. This synthesis between faith and reason that the Church holds out as a great good, it brings extraordinary blessing to people. And so you'll want to, again, pay attention to what Dr. Vershuin says about the role of right thinking when it comes to these topics. But first, let's get to today's headlines.
Thank you, Al, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, September 10th. It is the Feast of St. John Gabriel Perbore. And today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at Ave Maria Funds. Hurricane Florence is strengthening to a powerful Category 4 as it takes aim at the East Coast. The National Hurricane Center said maximum sustained winds are now at 130 miles per hour. The storm is projected to take aim at North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia later this week, as all three governors have already declared states of emergency. Brett Kavanaugh appears to be on track for confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court. Kavanaugh went through a long week of confirmation hearings last week. The committee is expected to move his nomination to the full Senate soon. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wants to get Kavanaugh confirmed by the time the Supreme Court opens its new term on October 1st. Most Democrats will likely oppose Kavanaugh, but they don't have the votes to block his confirmation. President Trump nominated the veteran federal judge to replace retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. And tomorrow is the 17th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and President Trump will visit the Flight 93 National Memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. First Lady Melania Trump is expected to join the president at the ceremony. The memorial is a tribute to those who perished when passengers helped bring down a hijacked airliner that was thought to be aimed at Washington, D.C. Meantime, Vice President Mike Pence will speak at the annual 9/11 observance at the Pentagon. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis will also deliver remarks, honoring those who died when another hijacked airliner crashed into the Pentagon. And now with your fascinating fact for the day, movie trailers used to come at the end of the films, hence the name. But no one stuck around to watch them. Filling in for Nick Tom, I'm Dan McGraw with your Ave Maria Radio News.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. You remember the film Unbroken, based on the Laura Hildebrand best-selling book. I think it was 2014. Outstanding film, outstanding book. And it tells the story of Louis Zamperini's capture, prisoner of war, and his really brutal handling at the hands of the Japanese, including one particular commandant of the prison camps, Watanabe, or the Bird. Many of us, as much as we loved the film and the book, wondered why more time wasn't spent on what happened to Lewis after the war and his remarkable conversion to Christ. Well, I'm glad to say now that there's a new film. You might call it Unbroken, too. But it's Unbroken, Path to Redemption, and it picks up where the 2014 film left off. And with me right now is the producer of that film, Matthew Baer. And, Matt, it's great to have you with me. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Pleasure to talk to you.
How'd you get involved in this project?
Well, it started in 1998, now about 20 years ago.
Wow.
Long before the book Unbroken, there was a wonderful documentary that was made for a CBS Sports about Lou Zamperini's life. And I had seen it and could not believe that this amazing man's story had never been told as a film. And so it took a long, long time to get the first film made. Fortunately, Unbroken, the book's success, finally gave Universal the ability to say yes to this amazing story.
Yeah. Well, this is a powerful story. I was able to see the screening last night before we talked, and I found myself deeply moved by it. And his struggles after the war, I think, are powerfully portrayed. The nature of the relationship with his wife, is remarkable. Was it a fun movie to make?
The differences between making Unbroken 1 and Unbroken 2, basically they're not even on the same planet.
Okay.
In terms of the actual producing of the movie, in terms of the size. What was most fun about making Unbroken Path to Redemption was the fact that it was being made. Because the post-war life that Lou Zamperini went through was something that I always wanted to be able to get on screen. And fortunately, because Unbroken was successful, I was allowed to get another swing at bat.
Yeah.
And I think that it was, for those people, as you mentioned, who are disappointed that the full story of Lou's life wasn't covered,
right.
I think that the new film is so successful because it takes the time to be able to tell the story of Lou's marriage, his battle with PTSD, his battle with alcoholism, and ultimately him coming to Christ at the hands of all people, a young Billy Graham, required screen time to do it right. And so I think that's what I'm most pleased about the new film is the opportunity to have audiences see the story in a way that treats it with respect.
Sure. Sure. I remember after the 2014 film, I talked with Lou's son and about this. And was he involved in this project as well?
Yeah, Luke is very involved. The whole family has been involved since the beginning in 1998 when Lou Zamperini had blessed me with being the person that he would allow to try and produce a film of his life. So, yes, Luke is involved.
Whatever became of the Victory Boys project that he had?
It's actually it continued for years after Lou, for years when Lou was alive. And actually, what's going on with it right now is there is a wonderful teacher in Dallas who is utilizing Unbroken as a class where kids are reading the book and then basically understanding what it's like to have to be in a raft with each other for 47 days.
Wow.
And so what they're trying to do is utilize that program to give new energy to the Victory Boys Camp in terms of what it is going to become in the future. It's a really lovely a lovely idea that this teacher in Dallas is doing. I actually got to meet her the other day when I was in Dallas, and she's incredible.
Wow, I hadn't heard that. That's that is great.
You can see it on the you can see the clip on the unbrokenfilm.com. You can see the segment on her. It's well worth looking at.
Very good. One of the things I loved about the Unbroken Path to Redemption is the amount of time that you gave to his wife, Cynthia, and the that relationship, it really has to go down as one of the most extraordinary love stories in modern times. 54 years of marriage. How soon did he propose after they met?
Oh, it was a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
The thing about that relationship was is that Lou had lost so much time. He was in a prison camp for 2 years, and so when he was put on tour to promote War Bonds, when he saw Cynthia, this amazing, energetic young woman in Florida, he fell beyond head over heels and did not want to waste any time.
Right.
And in the case of Cynthia had seen him as who he was on the surface, which was a war hero, Olympic athlete, who was charismatic and charming. And so they electrified each other. And so they got married very quickly. And then what happens in the story is what happened, which was that she did not know that the man that she married, Lou Zamperini, was struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder of the highest level possible. And they had a new child. And so the dynamic of their relationship is indeed fascinating. And the fact that Cynthia was responsible for bringing Lou to the Billy Graham revival ultimately literally saved his life.
Yeah, indeed. How is this? Have you heard anything from veterans or veterans groups about the value of this film in helping deal with post-traumatic stress disorder?
Oh, absolutely. It's a large part of what it is that we're trying to do. One of the most painful aspects of World War II, as exemplified by some of the scenes in the movie, is that the psychiatric departments of the military really had no understanding of what post-traumatic stress disorder was at the time. And many, many, many vets were left to suffer with people thinking they should just get over what it was that they were dealing with. And so, and to this day, obviously, vets are suffering from what they go through. So the point of the movie is, in essence, to remind vets that there is the possibility of hope and being able to reclaim your life. So that very much is a part of what we're trying to get the message out about the film, since it hits that head on.
The story of Louis Zamperini seemed to have been well known after the Second World War, I guess into the early 60s anyways, and then there seems to be a tunnel period where the story is not talked about, even among evangelicals, where I served for 20 years within evangelical Protestantism. It wasn't a story that was remembered very well. And then, of course, the book came out, and he's back on the in the public attention. Was there a reason there was a kind of a tunnel period in terms of the story, popularity of the story?
It's a good question. It's one of my favorite anecdotes in that Lou's story. He wrote a book in 1956 called Devil at My Heels, and that was bought by the same Universal Studios who's made the movie with the intention of Tony Curtis to play
sure.
Lou Zamperini. And so the movie never happened for a variety of reasons. And yes, the story sort of went to sleep. And then, as I mentioned earlier, in 1998, they made this documentary, and that's what brought it back to life, at least as a film.
Yeah.
And I think that Lou's popularity when he came home, especially when he became a member of the Billy Graham Organization, was extremely well noted. And then as Lou fit into his normal life, he basically went about his business.
Yeah.
And it indeed was quiet. That's one of the wildest aspects of Lou's story, which I say to people now, is that this story is now 70 years old.
Yeah.
But it still has an amazing resonance in 2018. There's not many people who you can say that about, but Lou is certainly one of them.
No, I agree. I mean, this is a story, war hero, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, extraordinary romantic relationship and fidelity in marriage, strong relationship with spouse, conversion, you know, alcoholism. I mean, this has so many great elements to it that speak to people today.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm experiencing that now, especially when it comes to the marital aspect of the movie. I've had numerous young married couples, express a tremendous connection to the movie in terms of battles that young couples yep. have in terms of sustaining their marriage yep. through problems. So, yes, imagine, and now that you've seen Path to Redemption, imagine the difficulties that we had in trying to tell all of this as one movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
It on its own terms, it justifies a four-hour version
yeah.
of the movie, and so that's what has happened.
Yeah. Well, I'm delighted that it's here. When is it going to be released to the general public?
It releases this Friday, September 14th, and
okay.
you can get all the information on brokenfilm.com. And I certainly encourage everybody to go see the movie, especially at a time in America when we need to honor our heroes,
yes,
as Lou was, and it provides inspiration in a really meaningful way.
Yeah. Matt, thanks so much for your work. This is very exciting, and for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Matt Bear is the producer of Unbroken, The Path to Redemption. He was also producer of Unbroken, the movie from 2014 based on Laura Hillenbrand's best-selling book. Look, this is a powerful story, very dramatic and very explicit about Lou's commitment to Christ. And I think some people in the first time when the movie was out it was a little bit ambiguous. So, coming up this Friday, it starts. Unbroken, Path to Redemption. I said, I just saw the screening last night and a little bit today. Again, loved it. Urge you to see it. Again, Unbroken, Path to Redemption. It finishes Louis Zamperini's story.
All right. You know, I want to go see that movie.
Absolutely. Donna read the book, and she thought it was absolutely fabulous. And
yeah.
We were a little disappointed in the first movie. Well done, but of course they stop.
Well, yeah, what right were they here. Thinking?
Well, they were thinking box office. They put a lot of money in there,
okay.
and they were thinking this is, you know, it was an appropriate place to stop
yeah.
for a story.
Right.
And now this is the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to tell.
Yeah.
This is really what we want to hear.
Yeah. Well, listen, here's what we want to hear. You've just tuned in. We're taking a break from Crest in the Afternoon, not for very long, but long enough that we can go and give out the phone number and the website for you to make a pledge of support to Ave Maria Radio. Now, so we're going to go back to Crest in the Afternoon. My name is Deacon Tom Lowy, and I'm joined with Mike Jones, who is the Vice President, General Manager for Ave Maria Radio. I'm a former development guy for this radio ministry, and one of the joys in my life is being able to come back here and be behind the microphone and ask again, once again, for your support for this ministry, which is like, I don't know how many years, Mike, how many years is it?
Well, we've been the ministry literally on September 6th, just a few days ago, turned 22.
Ooh.
September 6th, 1996 is when we went on the air for the very first time as WDEO.
Really? So Ave Maria Radio has been on the air for 26 years.
No. 22 years.
22 years.
22 years. That's correct.
Wow. Well,
it's incredible.
We're gunning for 23. Okay. But we can't do it. We can't do it without your help. Okay. So here's the way we do that. I'll give out the phone number, and I'll give it out twice. I'll give out the website, and I'll give that out twice. And then I'll give you the goal that we're trying to reach in this hour, and I'll give that out twice, okay? And then we'll see what we can do from there. Here's the phone number to call. And call in, please. And any gift that you make is going to be important, but consider, if you would, monthly pledges, because that just really helps us out in terms of budgeting and in terms of
cash flow.
It makes a big difference. Here's that number, 877-288-1077. Again, that number is 877-288-1077. Or you can go online at AveMariaRadio.net, AveMariaRadio.net. You can make your pledge of support by doing it in one of those two ways, by calling or making a pledge online. The goal for this particular hour, in the first day of the fall membership drive, is $5,000.
$5,000. That's right.
You know, we can do this.
Well, it's important. Yes, we can. The fact of the matter is, we're a team. These are the things we need. You know, we need operating funds to keep everything going, to keep the 23 different programs produced.
Wow.
And
how many hours?
Distributed about 53, 54 hours every single week of original programming.
You know, that's very unusual.
It is.
If you think about it. I mean, there's several radio stations in the Detroit metropolitan area that pride themselves as being local radio stations. They don't do 53 hours.
In fact, NPR has a program called Matters of Faith. I think it's called Matters of Faith. It used to be called that anyway. It's on for an hour every week on the weekends.
Now it's called Matters of Conjecture.
No. No, it's
okay,
it's
I'm not sure.
It's not Catholic by any means, but yeah. It's a nice show. But at the end of the program, they list nine, last time I counted it, like nine producers for this 1 hour a week.
Whoa.
Now, just so you know, we've got three people working, four people working full-time in operations to produce 54 hours a week.
Wow.
So think about that. Of course, and then we have a couple of, we have also Bryant as well, who's just helps Al produce Crescent.
Right. Yeah, he's dedicated to that photo.
Dan McGraw and Andrew Krutchek and Eric Dumont and, of course, Steve Clark, our operations director. Those are the people that make sure that all the mixing is done, all the editing is done, all the recording is done, all the broadcasting is done, all the distribution is done. These programs get sent all over the world, yeah. And it's fabulous.
Yeah.
So call in. Call that number right now, just like David did from Belleville. David goes to St. Aloysius. He loves Catholic Answers. he is his favorite. And you probably have a favorite, too. I know you're listening. You're probably listening to Crusty in the Afternoon at this time of day. And call now. 877-288-1077.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to go right back to Crescent in the Afternoon. That number is really important, 877-288-1077, or go online at AveMariaRadio.net. We're going to go back to Crescent in the Afternoon.
Discussion of contraception, questions about infertility, certainly physician-assisted suicide. Now we're looking at what Time Magazine calls the next great civil rights movement, transgenderism. And we're not on our own to have to figure out right and wrong here. We are part of a community that has been thinking together, trying to discern the mind of Christ. And we also have, I'm glad to say, a very well-written, popular, sound presentation to these moral questions of our time. It's a book called Matters of Life and Death. And its author, Dr. Gerard Verschuren, is my guest. He is, in fact, a scientist, a writer, speaker, consultant. He's been working at the interface of science and religion and creation and evolution and faith and reason for many, many years. And again, the book is called Matters of Life and Death, A Catholic Guide to the Moral Questions of Our Time. Dr. Verschuren, thank you so much for being with me.
Hi, Al. My pleasure to talk about matters of life and death, for they matter.
Well, we can know right and wrong, right? We're not left just guessing. We can know.
We can certainly know. As I always say, we know the laws of nature, but we also know that there is a certain order of morality in the world. Even Socrates, who was not a Christian, of course, he said it's always wrong. It's always wrong to do the right. No, it's always right to do the wrong. Of course not. Neither one of them is right. We have to do what is right. And as you said at the beginning in your introduction, the Catholic Church is a church of faith and reason. We use reason to find out what is right. And somehow we know that from the very beginning, and all we have to do is stick to it. We need a compass in life to find the way where we could easily get lost.
What do we mean by natural law?
The natural law is the way our nature is constituted by the Creator. We can, by the way human beings are, we can find out what is right or wrong, what is built into our nature. We have to realize that the human nature is essentially unchanging. We try to change it with all kind of biological tricks, mm-hmm. but the rules of nature are as important as the rules of morals. And all we have to do is look at ourselves and our physiology and the way we were built, and we can find out what is right and what is wrong. And the natural law tells us, by looking at our nature, at the order of morality, we can find out what we should do.
Now, what's the relationship between what we call common sense and our perception of the natural law?
Common sense is something that we were given and that we are almost losing, unfortunately. I always use the example, there is a joke, it says, don't touch anything in a physics lab, don't taste anything in a chemistry lab, don't smell anything in a biology lab, and I am going to add to it, don't believe anything in a philosophy department. Philosophers have been great in stopping all kind of common sense. But thanks to Thomas Aquinas, our great saint and doctor of the church, we know that there is common sense. And it tells us that there is some kind of physical order in nature. Stones that fall today will also fall tomorrow. What is wrong today will also be wrong tomorrow. Though some people say don't believe it, and those are the philosophers that I say don't believe.
Morality, what we call morality, morality is independent of our wishes. In other words, there is something called objective right and objective wrong. Is that right?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, there is definitely something about morality. We have been, I always call them traps. We have been trapped by all kinds of things.
Yeah.
It says morality comes from past experiences. Don't believe it. You don't have to kill first before you know that king is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or some say it comes from the animal world.
Yeah.
I am a human biologist, but I know enough about the animal world that there is no morality in the animal world. Otherwise, animals would have a tough life. They couldn't even kill each other. And then there is another trap that I call it. It comes from our genes. Forget it. There is no gene for what is right or wrong. For otherwise, we wouldn't have a problem saying something is wrong because the genes tell us that it's right. Of course not. Genes
right.
Don't tell us anything like that. And it's also wrong to say that it's done by upbringing, training, disciplining, or education. It's not a matter of... We have to educate people, of course, and we have to help them with common sense, but it is not a matter of training.
Right. I mean, we train... I mean, our parents or our teachers teach us the multiplication table, but that doesn't mean the multiplication table is just an invention of our parents or our teachers.
Correct. That is a perfect analogy. the laws of nature, like gravity, they were not taught to us, yes, in physics class. But we knew that if you drop something, it falls. So the same with morality, with morals, matters of life and death. It is not a matter of training or disciplining. Discipline helps to keep strict to it, because sometimes our will ignores what it knows through the mind, through reason. You know, the will is very strong sometimes to go against it for whatever reason. Sometimes it's lust. Sometimes it's what we have been told all the time. Mm-hmm. But we know deep down that there is something wrong with it.
Yeah.
So morality is a matter of objectivity. And even people who don't believe that morals are objective, they have one important absolute rule: never disobey your conscience.
Yes.
Where the heck does that come from?
Right.
That's unbelievable. I know the Nazis were good people because they followed their conscience, yeah, really. doctors who follow their conscience, they can be abortion doctors. Pro-lifers are following their conscience. But there is something wrong with that conscience, because the conscience is what I always call our compass, but a compass has to be aligned with the magnetic field.
That's right.
And at the moment, it's no longer aligned with the magnetic field. We have to adjust it. And what is our magnetic field in morality? As you mentioned at the beginning, it is the natural law. We can read it in our bodies, in our nature. And that's why basically all cultures, except the modern culture of relativists, they know that certain things are wrong.
Yeah.
Don't do to others what you don't want to be done to yourself, says the old golden rule. And even in Hinduism, we find those rules.
Yes.
We find them in Islam, and you go wherever you want.
Some people would say that discerning morality or perceiving morality is more intuitive and aesthetic than it is rational. How do you respond to them?
If you think that morality, and I'm not saying you, but if people think that morality is a matter of intuition, then we have a real problem. For you and I have very often different intuitions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I have the intuition that one and one is two, but someone else may say one and one is three. Okay, let them think that. But the problem is, I always say, if you try to build a bridge, and you are an engineer, and you follow your intuition, that's a good thing to a certain point. But if you ignore the laws of nature, your bridge will collapse before even anyone stepped on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with the natural law, with morality. It's not a matter of intuition. So if you follow your intuition, you could be in for a lot of surprises. And do we want it? I don't think you. So, George Bernard Shaw, he was one of those. He said, different morals are different tastes, as if there are many moralities.
Well,
if it's really a matter of intuition or taste, no further discussion would be possible, and we could all do whatever we want to do. But in the meantime, all those relativists or intuitionists, they claim that you cannot do this, you cannot do that, you have to acknowledge the rights of mothers who are pregnant. Why do we have to do that? How do they know? If it's all a matter of intuition,
right.
I would say forget
it. Yeah. No, I agree. What do you do with those who accuse us of what's called the is-ought fallacy? That by discovering what is, we derive some sort of ought from it. In other words, how do we turn a description of what is into a prescription of what to do?
Yeah, it's a very old debate, isn't it? And it's many people have heard about it, but they don't quite know what to do with it. And that's why you're asking a very important question, you know? It's they don't know what to do with that. They call it the naturalistic fallacy.
Right. Yeah.
It says you can never derive what ought to be done from what is. If X is found in nature, then X is natural, and therefore X is good. Some people might think that the natural law of Thomas Aquinas equates to that, but that does not make things good. So there have been many ways to say that there is no naturalistic fallacy. I think one of the...
Dr. Bashirin, hold on just a second here, because I hear the music coming up, and I want to come back and make sure we have time to do this effectively. So hang in there. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back and pick up on this naturalistic fallacy, the is-ought problem, and how St. Thomas Aquinas has been accused of it.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. I hope you're enjoying this edition of Cresta in the Afternoon. It's a little different because we're breaking in to let you know that we are in our fall membership drive. And last spring, we decided to try something new. Instead of spending 60 hours a week talking about the value of Ave Maria Radio and appealing to you to support us financially, we decided to try to just retain as much original programming as possible and then break in during these small breaks and say, we need your help. How about now? Now, last hour we hit the goal. It was beautiful. This hour, I don't know what's happened. We started out with $5,000 to go. Now we still have $4,500 to go.
Yeah.
What do you think's happening?
Well,
here?
I don't know. And I'll tell you, maybe they're listening to the program, because that programming was sweet. I was listening to that guy.
Yeah.
He was awesome. You know,
yeah.
He's that classic scientist kind of a guy. You know,
yeah.
He's a little German accent, and you know, it's like whoa. But anyhow, nice interview. I do want to thank some people that are that have made some pledges of support. I want to thank Cheryl from Brighton, Michigan. God bless you. You really helped us out.
Thanks, Cheryl.
I want to thank Michelle from Milford and goes to St. Patrick's in Brighton. Thank you so much for your support. And one more. Just came over the transom here. What is this here? This is Carol from Livonia, Michigan. St. Colette's likes all of the programming. Thank you so much, Carol. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Carol.
Now, I'm going to go and talk about the reason why we're not making our goals right now.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. It's because people are not making phone calls right now.
Now that's right.
And they're not online right now. This is the answer to this. And folks, I'm talking to you straight, and I know that you're hearing me. And if you would like to go and help Ave Maria Radio to succeed in its efforts, and I know you do, all you have to do is pick up the phone and make the call and make a pledge. We're not asking for specific amounts. We're just saying help us. Same thing goes with going online. And maybe you're closer to a computer and you want to go and do it that way. Yeah, we'll go ahead and do that. And help us out. Make us feel better. Help us to hit our goal. We have $5,000 as a total goal for this hour. We're down to $4,500 at this point. Here is the number to call. 877-288-1077. Again, that number is 877-288-1077. Or go to AveMariaRadio.net. AveMariaRadio.net. Just like Suzanne did. I just got this in from Ave Maria, Florida. Made a pledge online. Thank you so much,
you.
Suzanne. God bless you.
Suzanne.
We appreciate that.
You know, we talk about the co-responsibility of the laity. I see the Canadian bishops, their commission for doctrine, issued a document called the Co-Responsibility of the Lay Faithful in the Church and the World. I'm glad to hear that language is being used more and more. I hope our American bishops begin to use the language of co-responsibility. But, you know, one of the ways that we maintain co-responsibility is by supporting lay institutions.
Yeah.
Like Catholic Radio.
Yeah.
This is one of the great achievements of the post-Vatican II era, the rise of Catholic Radio. When I started in 1997, we had one station in Ann Arbor. By later in the year, there was a Catholic station in St. Louis, when I came here, there was already one in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. And there was one in Reno, Nevada. That's by 97 into 98. Now we're up to about 380 stations in the United States. And Ave Maria Radio produces a lot of the programming for all those stations. That's amazing when you think about it, because we didn't know what we were going to do. We knew we were going to do radio. We didn't know if we were just going to cover Ann Arbor at that time or Detroit. But in the providence of God, we began to work closely eventually with EWTN, and now they distribute Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Dr. Is In, More to Life, Mass Appeal, and our programs by Sandra McDevitt and Peter Herbeck and Sister Ann Shields. And so we got lots going on thanks to you. I mean, look, it can't be done without your participation. I learned this a long time ago. It doesn't matter how good your programming is if nobody wants to support it.
That's right.
You know, and you can support it a few different ways. You can have people donate. You have people pay premium prices, kind of commercialize it. Or you can go to a commercial format and get advertising sponsors to come and take care of it. We've relied almost entirely on you, because I like that idea, because we're all members of Christ's body. We all have a sense of mission together, and Catholic Radio helps to keep that in front of us. And so your support to Catholic Radio also means your support for the new evangelization. It means this is one way that you are a partner in the work of the new evangelization. So I'm pleading with you. We've got $4,500 to go here, and we've got another segment in front of us. Let's fill this up. Let's get this taken care of on Monday. Reaching the goal on Monday is a good sign for the rest of the week. 1-877-288-1077. Go to AveMariaRadio.net. Don't make a fool out of us. You know, we want to do programming.
That's right.
We don't want to go back to doing 60 hours of fundraising.
Real quick, you were talking. You said, you know, but we're here because of the providence of Christ. And I want the people to know, you folks that are listening out there right now, you are part of that providence.
Absolutely.
You are part of that providence. Here's that number again, 877-288-1077. 877-288-1077. Or go online at AveMariaRadio.net.
Benedict XVI.
He
said one time, the art does flow from the is. Why? Because once we know who God is and what a human being is, created in God's image and likeness, certain arts do flow from what is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like with a watch. A watch has to show the time. Otherwise, it's not doing what it was made for. And so we have to do what God put in our nature, in our bodies, in our minds. Otherwise, we are not doing what should be done, what ought to be done. So from the way God is and the way we are, certain arts flow from what is. And I think that is the best explanation why there is no is-ought fallacy here.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a popular moral principle that was used, especially around the turn from the 19th to 20th century, and that is the principle of social Darwinism, that somehow what is evolutionary process, the survival of the fittest. Therefore, we are obligated to let the strong survive. What's wrong with that?
You think there's something wrong with that? Yeah, I'm glad you think it's wrong. I do too, of course. And, you know, I admire Darwin in a certain way.
Sure.
But Darwin was a biologist. He was not a philosopher.
Right.
He was not a theologian. But the problem with Darwin is that he thinks that his biological approach explains everything else, as if there is nothing but biology.
Right.
Because he was not a good philosopher, he kept falling for his own fallacies. And that's where I disagree with him. So at the moment, the Darwinism becomes real evolutionism. That means that everything in this world is the result of natural selection.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a problem. First of all, how does he come to that rule? That is not science anymore. Science can never prove that natural selection is the only thing that counts in life. So that is already a philosophical viewpoint, a metaphysical viewpoint. I would say it's an ideological viewpoint in case of Darwin. Darwin was, I think he was very dubious in a lot of those things. Was he a eugenicist, someone who says that we should breed human beings like we should breed animals?
Mm-hmm.
That means we can kill them, we can breed them, we can do whatever we want. He doesn't really say that too explicitly, but I must say in his book about the origin of human beings, he does tend to that view, but he's very careful of saying it. But the fact that a lot of his relatives and his sons became involved with eugenics,
right,
it tells the whole story. I think that gave him away.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be the natural unfolding of his presuppositions. Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about eugenics, because it became very unpopular after the Second World War and the discovery of Hitler's euthanasia plans and other his eugenic experiments. There are many people now, the transhumanist movement, which seems to be trying to refurbish the concept of eugenics. And this is, as you write, the set of beliefs and practices aimed at improving the genetic quality of the human population. And first of all, you distinguish between negative eugenics and positive eugenics. What's the difference?
Yeah, it's a very theoretical distinction, but I think it's important to at least mention it. The negative form is aimed at preserving genetic disease, at preventing genetic diseases. So let's take the famous case of Down syndrome. For a lot of people think that is a genetic disease, and it is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But a disease doesn't mean that you are not a human being.
Right.
If that were the case, a lot of people would be in trouble. So we all have certain kind of diseases. So that is what the negative kind does. It prevents genetic diseases. The positive form is promoting certain genetic features, like the Nazis did. They had to promote the ideal Aryan human being,
mm-hmm.
and that usually means that all the others are in trouble. So that's the distinction that you asked for.
Yes.
I made it in my book, Matters of Life and Death, and I go into both kinds. They both have advantages, disadvantages, but I must say mostly disadvantages.
The positive eugenics movement is an attempt to look for the perfect child, the designer child, the perfect human being. And you write, quoting from Pope Benedict XVI, that man will always be greater than all that which makes up his body.
Yes.
Is eugenics primarily then concerned about preserving the best physical form of the human? Or are they also trying to create a kind of an intellectual eugenics movement?
They think they are doing both.
Okay.
But a lot of intellectual features that we have are not genetic. So I explained in one of my other books that there is no gene for morality, there is no gene for rationality, there is no gene for religion. And I try to explain it there. I don't want to go in here, so you would
sure.
you would kill me. So it's not a good thing to do. But to think that we can improve intellectual qualifications is very dubious, because the intellect is a gift that is not that comes from God, made in His image, because He is reason with a capital R, and we are made in that image. But we don't have the same reason as he does, of course, but we can at least try to get closer.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not in the genes. So if some people think that they can improve that, like they do nowadays in the, as you mentioned already, in the technology sphere, there is no reason to think that that is possible. And besides, they make a distinction between body and what Catholics would call the soul. To distinguish them that way is not fair. Bodies are always ensouled, and souls are always embodied.
Hmm.
So we are not living in a body like in a prison.
Right.
We are our body, and our body is connected with our soul,
mm-hmm.
as Thomas Aquinas would definitely stress too. But that is a very Catholic view. And nowadays, you mentioned already the gender issue. We very often think that human beings are trapped in their body.
Right.
We are not trapped in our body. We are our body. And we cannot deny the body we have. But that is part of our soul, or our soul is part of our body. So each time people like, I always mention her, is that Margaret Sanger, mm-hmm. the founder of Planned Parenthood Federation, she was one of those eugenicists. And she would always claim that as long as we focus on the body, and that's what she does, of course, in her Planned Parenthood followers,
mm-hmm.
then we are all set. No, of course, we are not. We are ensouled bodies, or embodied souls, whatever you want to call it. So if anyone says that someone is not worth to be living, then I would say, who makes that decision? You? But don't you decide on my life?
Yeah. Does it, from your perspective, does it look as though we're going to have, we're entering a more and more of a time of battle surrounding these fundamental moral questions? Is the Catholic point of view less and less respected today than it was 70, 80 years ago?
Oh, yes, I think it definitely is.
Yeah.
But as I said before, we can try, like I try to do in my book, Matters of Life and Death, we can to give it a basis, a rational basis,
mm-hmm.
and in faith and reason. But if the will is not willing to accept that reasoning, there is no hope. It's like with atheism. You can tell an atheist anything you want, and you can have all your arguments for pro and con religion. If they are not willing to look at the world with God in the picture,
right.
there is no way you can ever convince them.
Right.
Interestingly enough, I always mention Jean-Paul Sartre, the French philosopher, who was a very strong, belligerent atheist,
mm-hmm.
at the end of his life. And he was still in very good condition. All of a sudden, he said, I was meant by my Creator to be the person I am. Unbelievable. From a dedicated atheist.
I know.
Finally had convinced his own will,
yeah.
that he should follow rationality.
Yeah. Dr. Bergeron, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. Matters of Life and Death, A Catholic Guide to the Moral Questions of Our Time. I highly recommend it to you. We have it available in our online bookstore.
Hello, I'm Al Krista. Yes, that's right. I am Al Krista. A little echo effect there. And guess what? We're in our fall 2018 membership drive. Now, I don't know what to say. We had a goal of $5,000 at the beginning of this hour. We still have time to get there. But we've got $4,000 yet to go. And that is unlike the 5 to 6 hour. Now, I know we spent a lot of time talking about what you can do to take co-responsibility for the church. An engaged laity, as Benedict XVI has emphasized, is a laity that is invested in Scripture, in the sacramental economy of the church, who is engaged looking at the world and the culture to detect the signs of the times. The engaged laity is one that is has a passion for the mission of the church. The engaged laity are people who are detecting their calling and their giftedness. And that's listeners of Catholic Radio, probably the greatest concentration of those kind of Catholics in the United States. So I'm asking you to recognize that in Ave Maria Radio, in the work that we do here, we've got a lay institution that is taking co-responsibility. We need more. We need more, not radio stations, although that'd be wonderful, but we need more institutions in which laity are able to live out their calling and their giftedness. It's not a competition with the parish, for heaven's sakes. It's what the parish exists for. You know, Mass exists that we might participate in the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus so we can then go out into the world. Go. Go. That's what is said at the end.
What's the deacon say? The deacon says, go forth to proclaim the gospel of the Lord. That's what he says.
Yeah.
Go forth to proclaim the gospel of the Lord. That's what Ave Maria Radio is doing. When you make a pledge of support, that's what you're doing as well. I mean, that's your part of that process of proclaiming the gospel to the world. Okay, because whoever can hear us, and they hear us all over the United States, and I can, I'm going to give some thank yous.
Let's go to the number first.
Yeah.
1-877-288-1077. Let us know that we're on target here. That's the only way we can discern our direction. We have to hear from you. We got $4,000 to go in the remainder of this hour, so pick up the phone now and dial 1-877-288-1077 or go to AveMariaRadio.net. But let's make sure we don't want to have made a mistake here by shortening the amount of time that we are asking for financial support. Instead of 60 hours a week now, we've cut it down to about 10 hours.
All right, I'm going to give some real quick thank yous here, okay, because I know we want to go back to regular programming here. I want Veronica from Hickory, North Carolina, first-time ever donation. Thank you. Called us in. Goes to St. Aloysius in Hickory, North Carolina, and she says, please pray for those in the path of Hurricane Florence. So there's a call out to all of you right now. Say a Hail Mary for all of those folks. Joe and Nicole from Kentwood, Michigan, goes to Sacred Heart in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so thank you so very much. Appreciate it. Online
That's where
gift.
Father Sirico is.
That's right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a gift from Gloria. You have?
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed it very much.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Great. Gloria from Canton, Michigan, online made a pledge, and also Raymond from Detroit, Michigan, pledge online. Thank you so much, Raymond.
Appreciate it, Ray.
877-288-1077, the number again, 877-288-1077.
We have three lines lit, Tom,
and we
probably need to get eight lines lit in order to knock off this goal of $4,000 to go. Again, we knocked off $1,000 so far, and I know people hang on to the end of the hour. That's fairly common. But this is the end of the hour.
This is it, yeah.
So if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it. And really, this is an important hour. About 25% of today's goal, 20 to 25% of today's goal is wrapped up in this hour. So in other words, if this hour doesn't make it, then the whole day is going to be under.
If that land don't perk, there ain't no water. We have to have people help us. We got to perk this day and get the flow that we need here. We need to go and raise $5,000 in this hour, and we are short. So we do need to hear from you.
Hey, okay. If that hound don't hunt, we got no game.
You're there. Okay. 877-288-1077. I was just being a little corn pone, but I got it out. 877-288-1077 or online at AveMariaRadio.net. 877-288-1077.
So let's keep the calls coming. We got looks like three lines lit. That means we've got room for plenty more. We got great volunteers hanging around. They want to work. They want to, you know, get engaged themselves. So call them up now and let's move. We've got another call coming in. Four calls now. Five calls now. 1-877-288-1077. Love to get all these lines lit before we reach the top of the hour. 1-877-288-1077. We haven't had an update on the numbers, but when we began at this small section of the hour, we were $4,000 to go, and the paperwork is still being processed, so we can't bring that number down quite yet. I want to say again that we really do love working with you in this work of the new evangelization. It's an honor to be involved. And we're so encouraged day in and day out by what we see. At the present time, we are actually overwhelmed with correspondence from listeners because of the current crisis in the church. And because people, and let me tell you, you would think that the mail we were getting would be full of people embittered, angry, disgusted. And in fact, there's a touch of that here and there. But overall, emails that we're getting are from people who are grateful, hopeful, enthusiastic about the future. And yes, they do have some painful stories. But